This is Radio 4, and now the afternoon play, which was first broadcast in 1975, and which is being repeated to commemorate the 60th anniversary of the abdication of King Edward VIII.
Whereas it hath pleased Almighty God to call to his mercy our late Sovereign Lord King George V of blessed and glorious memory, that the high and mighty Prince Edward Albert Christian George Andrew Patrick David is now, by the death of our late Sovereign of happy memory, become our only lawful and rightful liege lord, Edward VIII. By the grace of God, of Great Britain, Ireland, and the British dominions beyond the seas, King, Defender of the Faith, Emperor of India. God save the King!
Crown Matrimonial by Royce Reitman, with Peter Barkworth as King Edward VIII and Gwen Franklin Davis as Queen Mary, with Martin Jarvis as the Duke of York, Jane Wenham as the Duchess of York, Rosalind Shanks as the Princess Royal, and Rachel Kempson as the Countess of Airlie. In 1935, King George V and Queen Mary celebrated their silver jubilee. In January 1936, the King died and was succeeded by his eldest son, the Prince of Wales. The new King took the title of Edward VIII, though he was known in the royal family as David. The Prime Minister at the start of the new reign was Stanley Baldwin at the head of a national government. Mr. Attlee was leader of the opposition. It is September 1936. A private drawing room at Marlborough House, London, Queen Mary's home since she was widowed. She is still Britain's only queen, for the new king has, as yet, no wife.
Lady Airlie, ma'am.
Oh, Mabel, dear. How good of you to come so quickly,
Your Majesty.
I'm afraid we have very little time. The King has proposed himself for luncheon. I see him so seldom nowadays that I jumped at the opportunity.
Be quiet.
Oh, do sit down, dear. You must be exhausted after your journey. Did you have a good crossing?
The weather was glorious. It was a mercy when we got out to sea. New York was like an oven. My son very kindly met me at Waterloo. Tells me you've seen Baldwin.
I never stop seeing him.
Ma'am, dear, have you spoken to the King yourself?
No. Yes, I know I should. But I can't. You've no conception how extraordinarily difficult and evasive he can be. He's like Queen Alexandra when he wants to be. Charming, vague, elusive. Oh, I never have been able to talk to him. Dear Mabel, we can't put off the dreadful moment any longer. Is the American press as bad as they say?
No, it's worse. She's being openly spoken of as the next queen. One headline in a Chicago paper referred to her as Queen Wally.
Wally?
W-A-L-L-Y. Her Christian name is Wallace.
Oh.
Then this cruise in the Balkans. They've been photographed swimming together and shopping. The King seems to be almost deliberately drawing attention to her. There are endless stories of her family background, her past life, her husband's.
Dear God.
Her first husband, who's still alive, was given to drink, I think. As far as I can gather, her own upbringing was actually perfectly respectable. But all the American press are convinced of one thing. The King, they say, intends to marry her.
But there can be no question of marriage. Apart from every other consideration, she's still the wife of Mr. Simpson.
She's divorced one husband. Why not a second?
He's head of the church, defender of the faith. It's out of the question.
The American press is convinced there's going to be a divorce. Mr. Simpson now resides permanently at the Guards Club. My son confirms this. Furthermore, the Americans believe the divorce will go through and be made absolute before the coronation.
What?
My solicitor says it's perfectly possible, providing the case is undefended. It's September now. If the case is heard in October, she will be free in April. The coronation is planned for May.
It's nonsense, sheer nonsense. It must be nonsense. Mustn't it?
Everything points to its not being. Ma'am, so far you have seen the crisis as one of the king being, how shall I put it, possibly having an open liaison with a married woman. I believe we are going to have a much graver problem than that to face.
It'll be the end of monarchy. I feel ill with shame. There's nothing to stop him, you know, Mabel. The Royal Marriages Act applies to a monarch's relations, not to the monarch himself.
Do forgive me, ma'am, but the king's car has just driven into the courtyard.
Thank you, Margaret. Mabel, dear, I cannot thank you enough. I wish I could ask you to stay to lunch.
I've arranged for Lady Airlie to have lunch with me, ma'am.
Oh, it's very kind of you, but I'm meeting Bruce. Will I see you, ma'am, before I go to Scotland?
Oh, I hope so, dear. And if not, the moment you return, Evelyn is making out a fresh rota for my dear ladies, and so you'll be hearing from her very soon.
His Majesty. Mama?
Ah, David.
Lady Airlie. Miss Wyndham.
Your Majesty.
Oh, David, my dear, you look so brown.
Well, it was very hot in the Mediterranean. Yes, I sunbathed a great deal.
So I gathered. Lady Airlie is just back from America.
Oh, really? Oh, I'm dying to go there again. Well, I hope to make one of my first state visits to Washington. Do sit down, Lady Airlie.
I was just about to go, sir, when you came in.
Oh, what a shame. I hoped you were staying to lunch.
No, she's lunching with Bruce.
Well, I'm sure my mother would be delighted to see him, too.
It's very kind of your Majesty, but we're having quite a family luncheon. The Queen can hardly be expected to feed the entire Ogilvy clan at a moment's notice.
Well, you are quite a tribe.
Well, give Bruce my love. And if he's in Scotland next week, could you tell him to ring me at Balmoral? Where were you in America?
In New York, mostly.
Oh, yes. Have you ever been to America, Miss Wyndham?
No, sir.
Oh, you should go. You'd like it.
Do you think so?
Oh, I'm sure of it. It's such a wonderful country. It's vital and full of pep.
Too full of pep, if the films are anything to go by. I'm sure I should be completely bewildered the entire time. I'm not modern, like you, sir.
Well, we need progress. We must move with the times.
Only if the times are moving in the right direction. Now, I often wonder if they are.
Mabel, dear, we mustn't keep you from your family gathering.
Ma'am. Sir.
Well.
Help yourself, dear. George and Marina tell me that you've acquired a taste for the cocktail. But in this house, you'll have to make do with a glass of sherry.
Oh, a glass of sherry will be delicious. But cocktails aren't terrible at all. If you could only bring yourself to take the plunge, I'm sure you'd like them.
They have such peculiar names. A side lady and a white car.
No, it's the other way around. It's a side car and a white lady. Oh. Do you have some sherry?
Well, perhaps just this once. A very small glass. Now, tell me all your news. Did you see Paul of Yugoslavia?
Yes.
Does he like being regent?
No.
Oh, that's what Marina says.
He's worried about Hitler.
We all are.
Well, I don't know. It depends what happens, I suppose. But Paul's even more worried, and quite rightly, I think, about Stalin.
Stalin? You do surprise me. You didn't go to Venice?
No, Eden thought I shouldn't. See, he's busy conducting his little duel with Mussolini, which is a sheer waste of valuable time. And all he's done is to make him Hitler's ally. And if you can see any sense in that course of action, you're cleverer than I am. Do you know, sometimes, Ma, I'd like to impeach the entire cabinet. I'd dismiss them if I thought it would do any good.
David!
Oh, don't worry, I won't. And apart from anything else, His Majesty's loyal opposition is almost as idiotic as His Majesty's government. So, I shall continue my own holiday, because I'm going to Balmoral.
Oh, good. I'm glad. The rest will do you good, and from all accounts, your Balkan adventure was far from restful. Though interesting, I'm sure.
So I suppose you read a good deal about it in the papers?
A certain amount. The foreign press was, I gather, rather a nuisance.
Well, I asked everywhere to be received with the minimum of fuss. Actually, Ataturk was the only one who gave an official reception.
Oh, he would, but then he's not a monarch.
No. No, he received us very formally.
Us?
Me and my party.
Oh, yes, yes. Bertie and Elizabeth are already up at Birk Hall.
Oh, good.
And they hope you won't mind, but they've asked Archbishop Lang to stay.
Well, they can ask whom they like. Why should I mind?
Well, they know you don't care for him.
I'm indifferent to him.
I think he was hurt not to be asked by you.
Well, he wouldn't have fitted in. George and Marina will be staying with me.
Oh, they're like that. George is so much less wild now that he's married.
Mm-hmm. When's her baby due?
December sometime. I've been very lucky with all my daughters-in-law so far.
Yes. Mama.
Yes?
Would you like another glass of sherry?
Not for me, thank you. No, do help yourself, though. Who else have you invited to Balmoral?
The Buccleuchs, the Roseberries. One or two others, some American friends of mine.
On the whole, I don't care for Americans. They're so loud.
Oh, I rather like them, Mama. In fact, I like one or two Americans very much indeed.
Luncheon is served.
Oh, shall we go in? It's just ourselves.
It is 2 months later, before dinner. Princess Mary, Princess Royal, Countess of Harwood, and Lady Early.
I wanted a word with you before I saw the Queen.
Ma'am.
How is she?
Exhausted, I should imagine. 5 extra audiences today on top of her usual commitments. She won't put off a single appointment.
Has anything else happened?
I think so. But what exactly, I don't know. The palace is in absolute turmoil. Mr. Baldwin has been on the telephone for over 30 minutes.
Good heavens.
It must have been important. You know how Her Majesty hates the telephone. For all I know, the Queen may still be talking to him.
Oh, dear.
The whole country is rife with rumours. I'm sure this press silence is unwise.
Unwise? I think it's one thing we're grateful for.
In my view, open discussion is preferable to all this speculation. Every MP knows, and they all have relatives and friends. The household all knows. We are none of us without families. Every person who goes abroad knows and comes back spreading further stories. The moment anyone realizes I've recently been to America, they ask me about her. What are they saying in America? How many times has she been married? Is she a millionaire several times over? They then go to the other extreme and rush round telling everyone her family were nearly destitute. The truth is the last thing they want to know.
What is the truth?
She comes from a reasonably well-off American family. Her second husband is English and rather well-to-do.
Have you met her?
Once.
Where?
Last month, at Balmoral.
Did you like her?
Yes, I did. She was exceptionally well-dressed. She was very witty. I would think her a most sensible woman, as a rule. At the moment, I suspect that after your mother, she's the most bewildered woman in Britain. I don't think she knows what is happening to her. The King has put her into a most terrible predicament.
Oh, Mary, my dear, thank goodness that you're here before David.
Mama.
Oh, he's seen Baldwin, but I can find out nothing. No one knows anything. The family, least of all.
I've telephoned Fort Belvedere, as you asked, ma'am. His Majesty left some time ago, and so he shouldn't be long.
Thank you.
How are you, ma'am?
Splendid, splendid.
Tired, no doubt.
It's been a trying day.
Yes, of course. I do hope this evening won't be too difficult.
I hope so, too.
It's always darkest before the dawn.
Always.
Margaret, dear, are you ready?
Oh, yes.
Margaret's dining with me, ma'am. The King will be here soon, and we cannot scuttle away like a couple of kitchen maids the moment he arrives. Your Majesty.
Your Royal Highness.
Oh, dear Lady Mabel.
Oh, ma'am.
Yes?
Shall I telephone the Duchess of Gloucester again?
No, no, it's too late. And besides, I couldn't possibly put her off at the last moment.
Ma'am.
I like Margaret, I really do. I just wish that she wouldn't relish the crisis so much. She talks to me as if I was a hopeless case in a hospital for incurables.
Anyway, Lady Early saved you.
Oh, Mabel is wonderful, a tower of strength. And so are you. I couldn't manage without you. Dinner this evening is not going to be much fun.
Well, what's all this about Alice?
Oh, it's too awful. I've done the most dreadful thing. Well, it isn't dreadful, really. It's dreadful of me to say it's dreadful, since I like her so much. Oh, dear, I'm becoming incoherent. It's like living on the edge of Vesuvius. Every morning my hands tremble, literally tremble, as I open my paper. I shall never forgive David for what he's done to us. Never. Even when it's all over, I shall never feel quite the same towards him.
Mama.
I mean it. Oh, I shall always love him. Always. But to expose us to this ordeal is unforgivable.
He couldn't help falling in love.
He could help this crisis. Did he imagine his choice would be welcomed with open arms?
He's so in love, I believe he did.
No, as long as she was married to poor Mr. Simpson, he wasn't able to marry her, so there could be no actual constitutional crisis. He could say with impunity that he would brook no interference in his private life. The moment she embarked on these divorce proceedings, the situation changed. But he doesn't understand that.
You've seen him?
No. Baldwin's seen him. I've seen Baldwin. The family doesn't exist as far as David's concerned. But about today, first of all, Baldwin telephoned me to say that he was going to Fort Belvedere to see David. And why is he out there, quite inaccessible? He's absolutely no consideration. He should be at the palace. Anyway, then David telephoned to say, could he come to dinner? I said, of course. Would we be alone? I said, did he mind your being there? He said, your being there suited him admirably. It would help.
It would help.
And those were his words. So it was all arranged, and he rang off. Then, and only then, I remembered that Alice was coming to dinner.
Couldn't you put her off? She won't mind.
I can't find her. Your brother, Harry, is at some army camp, and Alice has been on an official visit to Worthing. And then I had Baldwin's secretary on the telephone asking me to receive the editor of the Times as soon as I could. Naturally, I agreed, and Mr. Dawson...
Yes,
Dawson, came round at once and told me the Times were being inundated with letters about Mrs. Simpson, all hostile to David.
Is he going to publish any?
Not only planning to publish them, but he intends to support them with a bitter editorial attack on David. And once that happens, all the other papers will join in the fray, the floodgates will be opened, and we, the monarchy, will be bang in the middle of a political crisis. The country will be split in two. I implored Dawson to stay his hand, and for the moment he will. He won't publish the letters yet, but that's all he'll say.
Her Royal Highness, the Duchess of Gloucester.
No. Alice, dear.
Mama. Mm. Mary.
Alice.
How are you?
I'm a little distrait, I fear. I've had a trying day. You must forgive me.
Of course. Is there any news?
Not yet. Have some sherry, Alice.
Oh, that would be lovely.
Mama?
Not for me. Alice, dear, David is coming to dinner.
Oh, I see.
Yes, he asked if he might come, and I think he wants to talk about... business matters. Oh, dear, this is so awkward.
It isn't a bit. Obviously, it would be far simpler if you and Mary were alone with David.
You're so nice and sensible. I knew you would be. If only David would marry someone like you.
I feel so sorry for you over all this.
If you could just make some excuse after dinner, say you're tired and slip away.
Wouldn't it be simpler if I escaped now?
No, I won't hear of it. I asked you to dinner, and dinner you must have. I refuse to be inhospitable.
His Majesty.
Mama?
David. I've asked for dinner to be served as soon as you arrived. I know how busy you are, so you won't have long to wait.
Thank you, Mama. Alice.
Poor Alice. She's exhausted. She's been at Worthing all day, and she's asked if you wouldn't mind if she went straight home after dinner.
Of course not.
Oh, thank you.
Hello, Mary. How good of you to come. How are you?
Lovely to see you. Sherry, David?
No, I'm too tired. Is there any whiskey?
Yes.
If I could have some, Mama.
Of course.
Worthing?
Yes.
That's near Brighton, isn't it?
Yes, by the sea.
Yes, it's got a new town hall. Did I open it?
No, Georgie did.
Oh, why did I think I did?
Well, it was before he was married. He lived in York House with you then. Perhaps that's why.
Mm.
It's so awkward having a brother and husband called Harry. Don't you find it so, Alice? I find myself saying things like my brother Harry or my husband Harry.
It is awkward. I have a brother called George and a brother-in-law called George also.
Of course, in Queen Victoria's day, every branch of the family had to have a daughter called Victoria. This was most confusing. Mm-hmm.
To say nothing of all the Alberts.
I'm glad to hear that the outside of Buckingham Palace is to be repainted.
Well, yes, it's for the coronation. Oh, I must congratulate you, Mama, because I saw in the Times that your favourite charity, the London Needlework Guild, has had a record number of contributions.
Yes, yes, I'm very pleased.
You must be.
Dinner, I'm sure, will be very soon. I've told them that we won't be having coffee, so we won't be disturbed. Our brandy's over there, David.
Oh, thank you. Mama, Mary?
No, thank you.
Well, that was a delicious dinner.
I thought you'd like it, so I sent for Mrs. Grant and complimented her.
Oh, good. So I sent a message to her myself by the page. I can never remember his name.
John.
Oh, well. It's a very usual name. Well, this isn't easy. And the trouble is that not only have I so much to tell you that I don't know where to begin, but I'm uncertain as to how much you already know. Oh, dear, this is sounding like a prepared speech. Well, I suppose that's what it is, really, because I've rehearsed again and again how to tell you. How much, in fact, do you know?
Nothing for certain.
We have heard rumours, of course.
I wish I could help you to tell me. I wish I could convince you that I'm not unsympathetic to your difficulties. My parents were both very excitable people, and their emotions were always on the surface. They frequently embarrassed me. Perhaps that has made me reticent about my own feelings. I wish only to help you. You're my son. You're my king.
Yes, well, that's the trouble. I can't be one without the other. I'm in love. I'm in love with an American woman called Wallis Simpson. She's married to a Mr. Ernest Simpson. They're divorcing. And as soon as she's free, I will marry her.
Marry her, David?
Well, yes, of course. What else can I do? I love her, and I must therefore marry her.
I understand perfectly that having fallen deeply in love, you would wish to marry the object of your affection. But in this instance, there are certain difficulties. Yeah,
well, they can be overcome.
First and foremost, you are the head of the church.
A meaningless title.
Not to the general public.
It may be a meaningless title in Mayfair. It's not where I live, in Yorkshire, or anywhere else in the country. David, as Mrs. Simpson will be divorced... has already been divorced, I understand, from a previous husband. How can you marry her?
Mary has put the position perfectly. It is impossible for you to marry her. Surely you understand that.
No, unfortunately, I do not.
But, David...
It's impossible for me, with the church ruling on divorce as it now stands, and in my present position, to marry a divorced woman.
Well, then...
But rulings, even church rulings, can be changed, if necessary, and my position altered. Now... one or the other will have to be done.
Both are impossible.
No, let me finish, Mama. Now, I know you'll find this difficult to believe, and Archbishop Lang will be amazed, but I'm not without religious scruples. Now, if I were, there'd be no problem.
Dearest boy, I accept that absolutely. What I am unable to accept is the form your religion takes when it allows you even to contemplate marriage to a divorced.
But you do realize, Mama, that there's nothing to stop me from marrying Wallis tomorrow in a civil ceremony the moment she's free. And if I'd no respect for religion, nothing to prevent me from being crowned before she was my wife.
I realize that only too well.
Well, very well, then, sir. You must understand that if there is a crisis, it's not because I'm lacking in serious principles, but because my religion means a great deal to me. You see, Lang and everyone else in authority equate religion with solemnity. Well, I do not. I'm sure it's impossible to enjoy life and even seem frivolous and still feel deeply about religion.
No one doubts the depth of your feelings.
Oh, but you do. You all do.
Whom do you mean by all?
Well, Lang, Baldwin, and everyone. So I find the Church of England, like the present government, increasingly out of touch. And just as they underestimate my religious feelings, so they underestimate my desire for marriage. It's essential for me to marry the woman I love. And not just in a civil ceremony, but in church.
But how can you expect the church to bless your marriage?
Well, it must change its laws, or else my position must be changed.
David, David, David. Please believe me when I say that I sympathize with you. I really do. But we must be realistic. Now, I am the first to agree that you never had a chance to settle down. There was the war, and then those long empire tours, following one after the other. I said at the time they were a mistake. I said as much to your father.
Did you?
Oh, yes, and to Mr. Baldwin, too. Oh, I know you did a splendid job. Many people think that you held the empire together, but it gave you no chance to build a life, to settle down.
No.
I really do understand how much you want to marry, and I'm sure Mrs. Simpson is charming. I know George and Marina like her very much, and so do the Mountbatten.
Oh, Mama, I love her so much.
I'm sure you do. But however much you love her and however charming she is, as your wife, as your queen, she is out of the question. You have your duty to do as king. You must give her up.
Why?
She's been divorced.
Mm-hmm. There's no other reason.
What other reason could there
be? Well, you know nothing against her.
Other than the divorce, no.
I mean, she's not a criminal, for example, or an alcoholic, perhaps.
David.
Well, I can marry with the church's approval, a criminal alcoholic. But, the church will not allow me to marry a divorced woman.
David, there is nothing to be gained by getting excited and talking wildly. The church would have no reason to oppose your marriage to a criminal alcoholic. The government would intervene. To the vast majority of us, a marriage is for a lifetime. Now, I understand that this is a fact that you find unpalatable. Nevertheless, it exists, and you must face it.
Wallace's first husband drank. Their marriage became a mockery.
I don't know the American form of marriage service, but presumably she took him for better or worse. Now,
she left him for a time and then went back to him and tried again. Now, having failed with him twice, she finally decided on a divorce. She was the innocent party.
I'm sure that's all true. I understand that with her second divorce, she's again the innocent party. But divorce itself is what is wrong.
Well, not in my view.
The church's teaching is quite clear.
The church's teaching was laid down by men specially dedicated to a spiritual life, on top of which not one of its present leaders has the remotest understanding of the 20th century.
Be that as it may.
And furthermore, do you realize that the marriage vow is the only unbreakable contract? You can cease to be a clergyman. And the Roman Catholic Church will release nuns and monks from their vows. Only a husband and wife are to be tied together in permanent misery.
David, as a constitutional monarch, you can act only within the government's wishes. And in this instant, the government supports the church.
Now, only where I am concerned. See, civil remarriage for everyone else is perfectly legal and respectable.
You are in a unique position. You have to pay a unique price for it. You cannot have the privileges of your position without its responsibilities. Mr. Baldwin has explained this to you. You seem to understand no one's point of view but your own. As head of the church...
Well, the church is wrong. And in my view, it's uncharitable and unchristian on this issue of divorce and remarriage.
Nevertheless, the government...
Nevertheless, the government, incapable of a coherent foreign policy, of a constructive home policy for that matter, is prepared to be firm only on a matter of hypocritical virtue.
David, you are quite right when you say the Royal Marriages Act does not apply to you as monarch. But the moment Mrs. Simpson is free, you can certainly legally marry her. The press. Despite all the gossip, the press in Britain is still silent.
For the time being.
But once they know you plan to marry her, how can they continue to be silent about her then? The king's bride will become an object of legitimate interest. Her past will become public property.
What do you mean, her past?
Well, we all have a past. When George married Marina, the entire Greek family history was in all the papers. When any of us marries, this happens. It's a fact we have to live with.
Exactly.
Well, the press cannot fail to mention her former marriages, her divorces. The public will want to know when and how you met her. They will see that she divorced Mr. Simpson in 1936 and married you in 1937. They will realize that you knew her, fell in love with her when she was still married to another man. Well, the people of this country are fundamentally moral, and they will disapprove most strongly of such a marriage. Consequently, they will disapprove of you and your wife. And however nice she is, however much you love her, such a state of affairs can only do the throne damage.
Temporarily.
We cannot be sure of that. It could be lasting damage.
David, Mama and I are concerned for your happiness. But we are royal. We are also concerned for the throne.
It is impossible. Impossible, David. For any king of England, any son of mine, brought up as he has been in the tradition of service to his country, to put the throne in danger.
There's absolutely no question of that. The throne has been damaged temporarily before, but it survives. My predecessor...
Your predecessors lived in an age when republicanism was not at all common in other countries. Now it is. We are the only major power, still a monarchy.
Yes, I intend that we shall remain not only a monarchy, but also a major power.
Then, David, my dear boy, what are we arguing about? Your duty is clear.
No, we're now coming to the real point. You see, if I raised the religious issue of my marriage, it wasn't just for my own selfish viewpoint, but because I believe that the Church of England must become more modern.
Modern?
Well, up to date. We must all become up to date, the whole country. We can't hope to stay a major power unless we do. You see, I believe in evolution, Mama, not in revolution. But if we do not evolve, and with some speed, too, then we will face revolution.
Have you already forgotten our silver jubilee? It was only last year. We were overwhelmed with expressions of affection.
No, towards you and Papa personally, but not for the existing system.
The throne has never been stronger.
And the country never weaker. You see, the throne is strong because it changes, and the country's weak because it won't.
The throne has never changed.
Oh, of course it has. You changed it. So did Papa. Victoria changed it. She made it respectable. When her uncles have made it scandalous.
Oh, that's quite true, but...
Grandpapa made it gay, social, and continental when his mother's old age had made it provincial.
It was never provincial.
Oh, she never visited London at all. She spent her entire life in Balmoral and Osborne and that's all. Now, Papa made it British when before it had seemed German. And I must be allowed to change it too.
May one ask how?
See, people say that I don't want to be king, but I do. Would I have worked so hard as Prince of Wales if I didn't? So I want to bring the monarchy into the 20th century, and I want to stay on the throne. But on or off the throne, I will marry Mrs. Simpson.
What did you say? On or off the throne?
That's what I said, Mama.
Mary,
Mama, dear.
Are you serious?
Perfectly.
Oh, no. No! I know you're headstrong and stubborn, but not even you could be so silly. Yes! Silly! If you feel so strongly about reform of the church, dealing with unemployment and the international situation, it is your duty to stay on the throne and advise the government accordingly. All your arguments, every single one of them, are arguments for staying on the throne, not for running away. Cannot you see that? David, you can influence any government, but behind the scenes. That is your right. That is your duty.
If I
your
don't fight duty. Over this private issue, it'll be over a public one, and that will be far, far worse. I mean, don't you see that by making it over a personal issue, I'm avoiding a major conflict between the government and me?
But you must surely understand that you must never come into open conflict with the government at all.
Yes, I understand that perfectly. That's why I'm trying to contain our disagreement. But I'm a man as well as a king, and I must marry Wallis Simpson. I've told Baldwin this.
And?
Oh, he advises, so far, unofficially, against it. So I have two choices. To give her up and stay on the throne, or to marry her and abdicate.
Then only one answer is possible. You must give her up. It must be terrible to love someone that you cannot marry.
But I will help you. The family will help you.
I've chosen to abdicate.
David.
So you see, there'll be no open conflict. You see, Mama, there's something that you do not understand in all this. I cannot live without her. Not a day. Not an hour. Now, I've known more beautiful women and more charming women. Well, I must have done, because I know when I first met her, I thought her neither one nor the other. But to me, she's the most fascinating woman in the world. And her gaiety and, oh, her curiosity about life constantly delights. So to me, she's also become more beautiful and more charming than anyone else alive. And when I'm with her, I'm rich and fulfilled, and when I'm away from her, I'm only half alive. She gives my life significance. See, without her, it's quite pointless. So, I didn't hesitate for a moment when Baldwin advised me not to marry her. I said at once, very well, I'm prepared to abdicate.
What about us?
Us?
What about the family?
Well, what about it?
What is going to happen to the throne?
Well, Bertie will succeed, and he'll do it very well, really. I mean, he's what you all want. He'll do exactly as he's told. After all, he always has.
You're prepared to abdicate. To desert your post...
I cannot be king unless I am married to Wallace.
To desert your post, deny your duty.
No, I'm fully prepared to work and work hard at being king, but I must be allowed the fundamental right of every male in the world to marry the woman I love. So you all wonder if she's good enough for me. I wonder if I'm good enough for her. Oh, Mama, you'd understand my whole attitude and why I feel as I do. If you'd meet her, will you receive her? Will you see her?
You feel strongly about divorce and remarriage. So do I. My views are the exact opposite of yours. I cannot change now. No. I cannot receive her.
Mary?
I agree with Mama.
See, Wallace made two mistakes in her life. And a Christian society cannot forgive her for them.
If you stayed on the throne, if you did your duty, you could change that society.
But you see, I'd only succeed with her by my side. That is what nobody understands, not even she does. I mean, Wallace is your strongest ally, Mama. She wants me to stay. She wants me to give her up. But I won't. Not now and not ever. And if the only way I can marry her is by abdicating, then I shall abdicate with joy.
2 weeks have passed. It is late morning in December. The Queen is talking to Walter Monckton, KC, friend and legal advisor to the King.
But I'm sure you understand, Mr. Monckton, that the present state of affairs cannot go on much longer. The King must reach a decision soon. A fortnight ago, he said in this very room that he wanted to abdicate. He still hasn't.
You must remember, ma'am, that until very recently, His Majesty was the most advised man in the world. Now, in the supreme crisis of his life, apart from Mrs. Simpson, he has no one. His government, his court, even his family are all opposed to him. He therefore has turned to his personal friends for advice. And surely this is reasonable, ma'am.
On the face of it, yes. But who has he turned to? You, I know, are a man of great good sense. All of us are fortunate that you've agreed to act as intermediary between the King and the Cabinet. But what about the others? What about Church? What about Beaverbrook? They're anxious not so much to help the King as to attack Baldwin. You must know that as well as I do.
Churchill is a born cavalier and sees his loyalty to the King in terms of high romance. Beaverbrook was in the Bremen going to New York when he received a cable asking him to return, which he did, without as much as setting foot in New York. I don't believe their motives are as suspect as all that, and it doesn't matter if they are, as the King is determined to behave with constitutional correctness.
You mean he doesn't listen to them either?
That would be one way of putting
it. No, he never would listen to anyone.
Ma'am, the King's friends are all urging delay, but the only advice he wants is how to stay on the throne and still marry Mrs. Simpson.
But surely his friends all realize the nation will never accept her as queen.
She need not become queen.
Mr. Monckton, you're not seriously suggesting a morganatic marriage.
It's the only loophole open to him. Esmond Harmsworth took Mrs. Simpson to Claridge's for lunch and put it to her that she could become the king's wife without becoming queen.
Mr. Monckton.
After all, ma'am, foreign royal families did it quite often.
They were always disastrous. What does the king think of it all?
He considers it distasteful, but a possible solution.
It's quite impossible. And you've confirmed my worst fears. His secretary, Alec Harding, sent him a perfectly reasonable letter suggesting Mrs. Simpson leave the country, warning him of an impending crisis and telling him quite properly that the government might call an election to be fought over the proposed marriage. And what does the king do? He flies into a terrible rage and refuses to see or even to speak to Alec.
I don't think the letter was reasonable, ma'am. It was far too brutally worded. It put the government's point of view so exactly, it might have come from Baldwin's secretary instead of from his own. To suggest that Mrs. Simpson leave the country was a fatal mistake. That alone would make the king furious. His courtiers have been most unwise in their handling of the monarch. They have made the grave mistake of making it plain that they disapprove of him. And what employer would like that from his employees? On top of which, they have allowed their dislike of Mrs. Simpson to reach the point of venom. Do you know that some of his staff and their wives refer to her as the kitchen maid?
No. No, I didn't know. Oh, it's most unfortunate. It's most unkind.
It's worse than that, ma'am. It's disloyal.
His court may have been stupid and snobbish. I don't believe any of them are disloyal. You must remember, Mr. Monckton, they are concerned not just for the king himself, but also for the throne. The throne is more important than its occupant.
Those are Mrs. Simpson's sentiments, too.
Then why doesn't she give him up?
She can't. She wants to leave. He won't let her. In his present frame of mind, he's capable of following her in a battleship to China.
That I can well believe. The love he has for her is no ordinary love. Please sit down, Mr. Monckton.
Ma'am.
I met her once, you know.
Indeed, ma'am.
Yes, at a reception we gave for the Duchess of Kent before her marriage. My son submitted a list of guests, so, of course, along with the rest of his list, she had to be invited. I can remember nothing about her. I cannot even recall what she looks like.
She's an extremely nice woman. I like her very much indeed. She's calm, sensible, and discreet. But what woman, however sensible, wouldn't make a few mistakes? Her enemies paint a totally false picture of her. The other day I had lunch with my young daughter at Fort Belvedere. Mrs. Simpson went out of her way to make my daughter feel at home, to include her in the conversation. She's more than the wonderful society hostess she's always called. She's kind and thoughtful. She's also quite without personal ambition.
Without ambition?
Personal ambition, yes. The stories about her being an unscrupulous adventuress bear no relationship to fact at all. Of course, she'd be very ambitious for her husband. It may sound ironic, but she has a profound respect for marriage.
With two divorces? Really?
Oh, yes. She expects her marriage to be ideally happy and her husband to be successful, and she will work very hard to achieve those aims. The trouble with her is that she expects the husband to work as hard at his career and the marriage as she does. It must be ideally successful in every way. She will accept nothing less. Nor, I believe, will His Majesty. She is constantly described to me as the driving force behind it all. She's not at all. The king wanted her to divorce Simpson. When urged to stop the divorce by Mr. Baldwin, of course he refused. The king knows they are thought immoral, and it infuriates him. He's passionately moral. So is she. Oh, it would be easy for them both to be immoral. With a little discretion, this immorality will be winked at. That is why he's been indiscreet. He's deliberately dragged her round Europe, deliberately given dinner parties for her, so as to make a discreet love affair between them absolutely impossible.
You're a remarkably eloquent advocate, Mr. Monckton. I hope the King and Mrs. Simpson appreciate you. The fact remains that whatever his motives, my son has outraged the church, the government, his court, all of his relations, and world opinion. But tell me, Mr. Monckton, if Mrs. Simpson is a sensible woman, why doesn't she stop my son deliberately parading her?
May I ask, ma'am, have you ever tried to stop the king from doing anything? I've known him since we were at Oxford together, and I certainly can't. I implored His Majesty to wait a while before he put the morganatic marriage idea to Mr. Baldwin, but he absolutely insists on going ahead.
But if he does that, the Prime Minister will be bound to put it to the Cabinet, and then this whole business will become official. I've tried to help and guide my son quite without success. You will stay with him, Mr. Monckton.
Yes, of course, ma'am.
He's going to need your help.
I think I should warn you, ma'am. The press will have to break its silence soon.
And then God alone knows what will happen. As I look into the future, Mr. Monckton, I am filled with foreboding.
It is late in the evening, 2 days later.
Oh, Margaret, do put those papers away. The Yorks have arrived.
Oh, it's all simply dreadful. Crowds outside the palace have been shouting, God save the king from Baldwin.
People should know better.
The Duke and Duchess of York.
Lady Early, Your Royal Highness.
Margaret, how is Mama?
Oh, wonderful, as ever, sir. Perfectly calm, but of course very worried. I'll tell her you're here.
If you would.
Is the Queen very distressed?
Oh, yes. These dreadful papers were a terrible shock.
It's difficult to know which one is worse. I'm still very, very upset. We arrived from Scotland this morning totally unprepared for this deluge of publicity. Why were we not warned by the palace?
Well, they may not have known, darling.
Papers come out in the early morning, Bertie. Why wasn't a signal sent to the train? At Euston, we were greeted by what seemed to be every cameraman in London and huge newspaper placards shrieking the King and Mrs. Simpson. I don't think, Lady Early, that I shall ever be able to hear the words Mrs. Simpson without a shudder. Actually, it was rather funny. We went to some reception and the butler announced the Bishop of Kensington and Mrs. Simpson. The room absolutely froze, and in walked the bishop, and on his arm was his amiable wife.
That was the first indication we had that the secret was no longer a secret. Is the king here yet?
No, sir.
But he is coming.
He said so.
Mama wanted us here first, darling.
Thank goodness you're both here. Elizabeth, my dear.
Mama.
Oh, dear Bertie. Oh, thank you, Mabel, dear.
Ma'am.
Mama, have you any news?
Only what I read in those dreadful newspapers. I sent David an urgent message, and he's coming round after 10, he said.
Why so?
I've no idea. I'm in the dark. I'm never off the telephone, yet nobody knows anything. She has, I gather, at last left the country.
Yes, but too late. When Alec Harding suggested it 3 weeks ago, it might have done some good, but not now.
David wouldn't let her go. It was only because he was frightened for her safety that he agreed now to her going. You both got to understand one thing. He loves her. He loves her with all the passion of a boy in his first youth.
Yes, but he's not in his first youth. He's 42. Well,
I would be very grateful if someone would explain the situation. We hear vaguely from a number 10, from you, but never from Fort Belvedere, never from David. Of course, we've been in Scotland.
Oh, there are, I believe, telephones in Fort Belvedere. And please correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm sure it's possible to ring up Scotland from Windsor Great Park.
David is under a great strain, darling.
And so are you. No one seems to understand that. Least of all, David, you are under great strain. If he deserts his post, you would have to take over.
He would never dream of doing a thing like that. Baldwin's warnings were merely routine. I'm sure it won't happen. I can't. If that's what's making you so upset, I'm sure you're being upset about nothing. I know David. The government knows him. They know that in him they have a first-rate king, and they wouldn't let him go. You'll see. No, what distresses me in this is that I'm his heir, his brother, and I would like to help him somehow. Just wish he wouldn't ignore me.
Oh, darling Bertie.
It's not out of the question.
Not...
It's not impossible. Your taking over is not at all impossible. The government will let him go. They're at loggerheads over everything. The impossible is happening. It shouldn't be, but it is. That is why I wanted you here before, David, to tell you what you are up against. Mr. Baldwin's warnings were not routine. They were meant.
Why do you think David will... desert?
Because he believes his duty to Mrs. Simpson is greater than his duty to his country.
When is he going?
I've no idea. You've been in Scotland, a country composed of relatively sane people. I have been inhabiting cloud cuckoo land, where there are no answers to any question except another question. And it's all so simple. You either do your duty, or you don't.
What am I going to do, Elizabeth? I've not been trained to be a king.
His Majesty.
Mama. Bertie.
Tell David.
How is Scotland, Elizabeth?
We are anxious for news, David.
Yes, I know. There's nothing definite to tell you.
You've seen the papers.
Well, naturally.
I find them extremely disturbing.
No more than I do, I assure you. Wallace was appalled.
Are you going to abdicate?
Nothing is settled. You've urged so strongly, naturally I'm trying to remain.
If you are set on marrying this... then obviously you
cannot...
You may
refer to Wallace by her Christian name or by her present surname, which is Mrs. Simpson.
I do not know the lady, so naturally I cannot refer to her
by her. The fact that you do not know her is not her fault, nor is it mine.
David, I know how devoted you are to Mrs. Simpson.
I've had to send her abroad, you know.
Yes, dear, I know. I assure you, I do not mean to add to your obvious distress. However, we, the family, your family, are distressed too.
David, why are we told nothing?
Because I wish to keep you all out of it. See, this is not a fight between the whole royal family and Parliament. Nor is it about the principle of monarchy and Parliament, but it's between me and the Cabinet, me and Baldwin. Now, if you were any of you to become involved, particularly you, Bertie, then you would be an ally of mine. And should I fail, and it would not just be my failure, but your failure too, the whole family's failure.
Fail at what?
In my fight with Baldwin. But you realise he won't take this to Parliament? Parliament's not been consulted. He won't even let me broadcast. And why? Because he knows there's a body of opinion in my favour. I mean, he wants to present Parliament with a fait accompli, which Churchill says is unconstitutional.
When was Churchill ever right about anything? Look at India and the Dardanelles. His support is of no value to you, and in this instance, everybody supports the Prime Minister absolutely. Mr. Attlee supports him. Can't you see that by refusing to put it openly to Parliament, the Prime Minister is protecting you, protecting the Crown from becoming a point of political controversy? You should be grateful to him. If the Crown becomes a point of controversy, it will lose its entire value. We are the centre of affection. We are the heart of the nation. We are a rallying point in national disaster. No president, no prime minister can fill that role, and you are destroying us.
How can I be when I've removed the argument from any possible political controversy?
But to argue at all with your prime minister... and to have the argument made public is in itself making the Crown controversial.
No. I am the point of controversy, not the Crown.
You cannot separate the two. Nobody can.
I'm prepared to go. I stated that clearly, right?
Yes.
So, if I'm prepared to go, should the government wish me to go, then there's no conflict. I've agreed. How can there be conflict?
So you are definitely going?
Oh, no.
David, dear, I'm growing old. I speak German and French and Italian. The double Dutch I never mastered.
I said I was prepared to go. I didn't say I wanted to go. There's no hint of a desire to go in my choice of words.
Dear David, in uttering them at all, you abdicated and you never even knew it. I don't think you understand anything.
If You go, David. What is going to happen?
Well, you will take over, of course. What else?
I was waiting for that.
If you stay and marry Mrs. Simpson, what will happen? You won't have a government. Mr. Baldwin will resign. His entire cabinet will resign. Mr. Attlee won't take over. The Labour Party disapproves of your proposed marriage quite as bitterly as I do. The working class woman is a respectable woman. She's used to having one husband and sticking to him.
I agree.
You won't have an Archbishop of Canterbury. Not one bishop will attend your coronation. Oh, I dare say you'll be able to persuade some renegade clergyman to crown you, and I dare say to marry you. But it will be a public humiliation and a mockery of all the throne stands for. So you will have no government on the one hand, and will be at loggerheads with the church on the other. May I ask, do you propose to become a dictator and a pope?
No, Mama.
Really, we might as well be living in Romania. Let me make one thing clear to you. If you should succeed in staying on your own impossible conditions, in no circumstances whatsoever will I receive Mrs. Simpson.
Not even if I marry her morganatically?
Not even then. Never. Never as long as I live. Monarchy symbolizes the family. It is that which gives us our strength. We are born, we marry, we die as a family. A wife shares in every way her husband's position. A morganatic marriage in which Mrs. Simpson is your wife but not your queen strikes at the whole principle of family life. It'll never work. The cabinet can only reject the idea.
And if she did become queen, what would you do then?
I have lived my life on certain principles which I know you deplore and consider narrow-minded. And I will not abandon them now. I will never receive her, nor attend any function which she attends.
Mm. Well, I'm sorry you've ranged yourself with my enemies, but I expected nothing else. Neither you nor Papa could ever miss an opportunity to criticize me.
That is not true.
No, I've got a royal memory too, and I can quote examples at length if you so desire. But I'm as dedicated as you are to the monarchical system, and I've no wish to abdicate. So what I'm striving to do is to find a formula whereby I can stay and at the same time marry Wallace Simpson.
You could give her up.
Could I? So you're happily married, Elizabeth. Could you give up Bertie?
We are already married. It's not the same.
No, it's the same to me.
And when we married, we did not divide the country.
No, you married Bertie because you loved him. I trust you've stayed married for the same reason.
I waited some time. Months, if not years, before I was certain. Being certain, I then made vows which to me mean a great deal. I would never have made them if I hadn't meant to keep them. All married people make these vows of their own free will. No one forces us to do so. Wallace Simpson has made them twice, and broken them twice.
To do so once may be allowed in the most terrible of circumstances, but to break your marriage vow twice, to divorce twice, is unforgivable.
Naturally, I sympathize with your desire to escape. I was myself reluctant to.
No desire to escape.
It's in everything you say and do.
No, you're reading into my words what's not and never has been there.
You're putting your personal wishes before your duty to your country. The throne asks for the supreme sacrifice in time of war, a sacrifice millions of men make. It is inconceivable to me how you can accept such a sacrifice from them, yet refuse a far lesser one in return.
Oh, I don't mind dying for my country. What I refuse to do is live in misery for my country. No one is asked to do that.
The truth of the matter is that you are convinced that our sacrifices in the name of duty are always unimportant compared to yours. Bertie's sacrifices have been endless, and he makes them cheerfully without complaint, on top of which he's had to fight ill health and a stammer. None of this interests you in the slightest. The weight of opinion against you is overwhelming. Yet you are so vain.
Yes,
that
yes,
not for
all right,
one moment
all right,
do you think right, this opinion
thank you,
could be
thank
right
you,
and
okay,
you wrong.
Yes, weight of opinion is the correct expression. There's Baldwin, about to retire from a glorious career, the end of which our country is defenseless. Lang, whom you all admire, nauseates me with his unctuous hypocrisy. And I wonder if there's a bishop under 60. But there are young people in this country. There are young people who take over and who reject these outmoded codes of behaviour. Must the throne always be a backwater of fossilised opinion?
All this passion is very fine. But what is happening now?
Now I'm striving to stay on the throne. It is a private, personal difference of opinion between me and Baldwin. That's why I live at the fort, my private home all the time.
What will happen if you are told to go?
Well, I'll go, and naturally Bertie, as my heir, will take over.
Just like that.
Well, if I died, that's what would happen?
Death is not deliberate. This act of yours will be. Bertie is unprepared. You knew for 26 years you would be king. You have always taken Bertie for granted, and without the slightest consideration you take him for granted now. We have two children, whom we hope to bring up in reasonable privacy. Now, if you go, we'll have to bring them up in a glare of ghastly publicity. And if you dislike being king, do you imagine Bertie will enjoy it? You are prepared to put a burden you regard as intolerable onto your own brother's
shoulders.
No, I
regard it as intolerable only because I am not married, and he is.
This past year has been hell on earth for all your court, your relations, your mother, and for Bertie and me. We have been through the tortures of the damned in Scotland these past weeks, having to go to endless functions, told nothing by you. Rumours,
well, I was keeping you out of it.
We have as much at stake as you have. More. We will have to clear up the mess. When did you get the papers this morning?
First thing.
We were on the train. Why didn't you get a message to us? You knew it would be an appalling shock to Bertie. Yet you could allow us to arrive at Euston to a blaze of publicity with placards screaming your name. Oh, you will career around the country, putting on a tremendous show of concern for the poor. But nothing is to be allowed to interfere with your dream of happiness. You can't sit at a desk and read state papers.
Yes, that's all anybody can think of, state papers. My father read them all, Baldwin did as he liked, and we're in a mess.
Your father was a conscientious monarch. How dare you suggest otherwise?
As for your plans for the future of this country, they sound to me like a nightmare, everybody divorcing everybody. You say you want to reign, but on your terms. You say you wish to be a constitutional king and will act only through the government, but it has to agree with you. You say the church is out of touch, but only now do you say it when you want to break its laws. Everything has to be sacrificed to your vanity. The country, Bertie, the children, your mother, me, the throne. Everything and everyone, so that you can be happy in your private life. You are mesmerized by your own legend.
Elizabeth, David is still the king.
Well, don't forget you have a legend too. The perfect wife and mother. I hope it's not making you smug.
David, you are not to be rude to Elizabeth. Do you hear? I won't have it. I will take over if necessary. But, David, let me put it to you this way. Don't you think it is your duty to stay as king? You would do it better than anyone.
No,
he would, dear. Don't you think it is your duty to stay even with... out, Mrs. Simpson.
It's my duty to try and be a good king. Without her, I'd be a bad one. So without her, I cannot be king. I know it's unthinkable, but if Elizabeth were to leave you, do you think you'd be a good king?
I'd try to be.
And you'd succeed, Bertie?
Yes, very possibly, Mama. But you see, I'd fail. And that's the difference between your two sons. Without the woman I love beside me, I'd fail. So what can I do?
It is early evening, 2 days later, the 11th of December.
Mabel!
Yes?
Have you heard the news? It's just been on the wireless. It's over. She's given him up. She's issued a statement from the south of France saying she's withdrawing from an intolerable situation. So, it's over. Well, aren't you delighted?
No.
because it isn't over at all. It can't be. It's far, far too late.
But he hasn't abdicated yet.
Morally, he has.
Nothing signed.
He's committed to her beyond hope of recall. A month ago, even a week ago, a dignified joint statement renouncing each other and marriage could have worked. But now, after everything that's happened, how can he accept her renunciation?
But what if she insists?
She can't. It would be pointless. The crisis can only end when he goes.
Goes?
I'm sure of it.
You mean goes?
Yes, that's what I mean.
But everyone is begging him to stay.
Yes, but none of them mean it, least of all the politicians. He interferes too much. Look at that visit to the Welsh miners. Something must be done, he says. Well, of course something must be done, but even Attlee agrees the king can't tell the government in public what to do.
Well, this is a pretty kettle of fish. I've just heard the news from dear Archbishop Lang. What are we going to do now?
I hope that you were going to rest, ma'am.
So did I, Margaret. But some idiot from the Earl Marshal's office sent me 50 pages of foolscap about the forthcoming coronation. Quite apart from anything else, I would like to know, whose coronation are they planning? David's or Bertie's? David was to abdicate today, now he may not. I don't know if David's king or if Bertie's king, or even if we have a king at all. I've had just about as much as I can bear.
Mama, it's all over. I'm a king.
Oh, my dear boy. Come, Margaret.
Yes.
I'd sooner face a firing squad than be a king. I never wanted to be. Can't even say the word.
Listen to me, Bertie.
It's the most terrible event in history, my becoming.
Just listen to me. David was confident of success, sure of it. Yet he failed.
I know. And
unlike him, you'll succeed. Don't interrupt me. It was because he lacked your qualities that he failed.
He's clever. He's astute. He can talk to people. He can dominate a crowd. I've seen him. I can barely make a speech. If I have any popularity at all, it's because of Elizabeth and the children.
You're like Papa, very like Papa. He too had difficulties to overcome. You mustn't imagine that just because we were so popular at the end of our reign, we were as popular at the beginning. Far from it. I hadn't Queen Alexandra's beauty and I hadn't her charm. Elizabeth is popular, but so are you. They know she would never have married a man not worthy of her.
Saying all this to comfort me. You're wrong. It'll all blow up in our faces.
What will?
The monarchy.
Nonsense.
I don't know anything. Omi Lassels had to explain the simplest things to me. I've always been devoted to David all my life. Supported him as best I could when he quarreled with Papa. I've never criticized him, never. All right, he can't live without her, but surely he must have realized he was landing the rest of us in the most dreadful muddle.
I doubt it, and that is the difference between you. You would have thought of everyone else, prepared them in good time, and that is why you will be a far better king than David would ever have been. Truly.
I can't speak. I could hardly get through the accession address. I live in terror of the coronation oath. I feel so bloody stupid standing there stammering.
Yes, well, the first thing for you to do is to have some whiskey. Yes, I'm not quite sure what a double or a treble is, but I'm convinced that this is a quadruple.
It's enormous, Mama. I shall be drunk.
Good.
There's a crowd outside. I can't be seen leaving here in a state of intoxication.
I don't suppose after the amazing events of the past week it would in any way surprise them. All I do ask of you, Bertie, is not to fall flat on your face as you get into the car. It would be a discouraging start to your reign, which I am sure will be in every way a tremendous success. Now, let us look at all your assets and, yes, your defects. We'll get rid of the latter first. You're shy. So was I. So was Queen Victoria. You stammer. That is all but conquered.
Now,
Mama... It's only because you're upset that it's rather stronger today. Your coronation oath can be learnt and rehearsed in advance. You feel stupid stammering, but your audience admires your courage. Now your assets. There are so many, I hardly know where to begin.
Your Mama, really...
No, I do not exaggerate. You have courage. Not just physical courage, moral courage, and that's far more important. You persevere. That's how you conquered your stammer. By perseverance. You're as good a mixer as David. Look at your years in the Navy and your splendid boys' camps. You know quite as much about industrial affairs, or else why did your brothers call you the foreman? You're patient. David isn't. You're considerate. He's not that either. You have true humility.
I have got Elizabeth and the girls. And you, Mama.
And me. And the family. We must all behave as if nothing was wrong, nothing had happened.
Well, we'll do our best.
It's the only thing anyone can ever do. Tell me, is the kid... Is David really going to broadcast?
Yes. The government has decided that now he's no longer king, they can't stop him. They don't want to be accused of censoring him.
I think it's a pity.
Personally, I think it's a wise decision. He feels very strongly about it, and a public statement from him will make it clear he is abdicating by his own choice. The BBC were going to announce him as Mr. Edward Windsor.
That's quite wrong.
Don't worry, I told them that. As the son of a king, he's a royal highness, so he'll be announced as Prince Edward. The Privy Council queried this, but I pointed out that if he's not royal, he's a private citizen. And as such, he could, if he wished, stand for Parliament. As that's the last thing anyone wants, they agreed with me at once. I shall give him a dukedom.
That would be best.
I'll suggest making him a Duke of Windsor.
No, he can't take that title. It's the name of our dynasty.
Exactly. In time, it will emerge in with the rest of us. He's broadcasting from Windsor Castle after dinner tonight. I'm giving a family dinner for him at Royal Lodge.
I take it Elizabeth won't be there.
Apart from every other consideration, she's too ill. Her temperature's 103. But I hope you'll come.
Oh, yes. And after the broadcast...
He'll drive to Portsmouth. I've arranged for an unescorted destroyer to take him to France.
He said something about going to Switzerland.
He's changed his mind. Mrs. Simpson has arranged for him to stay with the Rothschilds in Vienna.
Poor David. What will his life be like now? He won't be able to see Mrs. Simpson because of the divorce regulations. For 6 months, that's what's so awful. He's going to be very lonely.
Yes.
Well, you must go back to Elizabeth. Dear Bertie. Bertie?
Thank you, Mama.
The order a car for me, Mabel, dear. I'm dining at Royal Lodge.
That's better, ma'am.
What's better, dear?
You look cheerful again.
When I first curtsied to David, he protested, looked embarrassed. I've just made my first curtsy to Bertie, to King George VI, and he accepted it as his right. He will make a good king.
This is Windsor Castle. His Royal Highness, Prince Edward.
at long last, I am able to say a few words of my own. A few hours ago, I discharged my last duty as King and Emperor. And now that I have been succeeded by my brother, the Duke of York, my first words must be to declare my allegiance to him. This I do with all my heart. You all know the reasons which have impelled me to renounce the throne. But you must believe me when I tell you that I have found it impossible to carry the heavy burden of responsibility and to discharge my duties as king as I would wish to do, without the help and support of the woman I love. This decision has been made less difficult to me by the sure knowledge that my brother, with his long training in the public affairs of this country, and with his fine qualities, will be able to take my place forthwith, without interruption or injury to the life and progress of the empire. And he has one matchless blessing, enjoyed by so many of you and not bestowed on me: a happy home with his wife and children. During these hard days, I have been comforted by Her Majesty my mother and by my family. The ministers of the crown, and in particular Mr. Baldwin, the Prime Minister, have always treated me with full consideration. I now quit altogether public affairs, and I lay down my burden. It may be some time before I return to my native land, but I shall always follow the fortunes of the British race and empire with profound interest. And if, at any time in the future, I can be found of service to His Majesty in a private station, I shall not fail. And now we all have a new king. I wish him and you, his people, happiness and prosperity with all my heart. God bless you all. God save the king.
It is 9 years before the Duke of Windsor again visits his mother. During the war, he has served as governor of the Bahamas. His younger brother, the Duke of Kent, has been killed on military service, and Winston Churchill has just been defeated in the first post-war election.
Well, I'm afraid I'm earlier than expected.
Her Majesty will be back in a moment, sir.
Oh, thank you.
The King and Queen had to cancel a drive through the East End, so Her Majesty went instead. I expect the crowds detained her.
I expect so. How have you been keeping, Miss Wyndham?
Very well, thank you, sir. And you, sir? How are you?
Oh, I'm quite well, too. So is my wife.
I'm so glad.
Yes, I'm so looking forward to seeing my family again. And they're all my old friends, Monckton, Beaverbrook, Churchill.
I was shocked beyond measure when he lost the election.
No way, I wasn't.
But he was so popular.
Oh, but you can't rely on popularity.
No.
Or on gratitude. Both very ephemeral emotions, don't you agree?
Yes.
No one votes out of gratitude.
I thought you'd like to know, sir,
The Queen's car is driving up.
Oh, thank you. John, isn't it?
Yes, sir.
Well, that's not bad for 9 years, is it?
Marvellous, sir.
Miss Wyndham, would you make sure my mother knows I'm here?
Yes, sir.
John, is my mother very changed?
No, sir. She uses a stick sometimes now, sir.
A stick? Oh, I didn't know. Oh,
that's the only difference, really, sir. She liked living at Badminton. She loved going into the village and made great friends with the locals.
Oh, really? How splendid. Well, thank you, John.
Sir.
Ma'am?
David. My dear, dear boy. Oh.
Mama.
Oh. How nice to see you. Oh, I was so sorry I was out. Bertie has a cold, and then poor Elizabeth had to receive General de Gaulle, so I went to the East End for them.
Oh, well, I was early. You look A1, Mama.
I'm older. Older. Well, well, well. Sit down, David. Ah, I'm so delighted to see you again. So much has happened.
Well, London doesn't seem so very changed. I thought the damage would be worse.
I've only just moved back here. This room and my bedroom are all right. There's a great deal to do elsewhere. Everywhere, in fact. Was Paris badly bombed?
Not really. Wallace and I have been very lucky, and most of our things have not been damaged or looted.
Didn't you write and say that there were landmines in your garden?
Oh, in the south of France, at La Croix, but not in Paris.
Ah, are they cleared away yet?
Not yet, no. We can't live at La Croix until they are. So, we were wondering what to do because our lease is up in 1947.
You could renew it, I suppose. It might be wise.
But living in France was only a temporary measure. We're not certain we want to stay there.
You're dining with Bertie and Elizabeth tonight?
Yes.
I must prepare you, I think. He's older. He's very tired. You'll find he looks it.
Yes, I'm sure.
He never spared himself throughout the war, nor did she. I think they worked harder than anyone else in the country. I really do. They're very, very popular.
Well, I was sure they would be. Yes, I'm so glad, Mama.
I was reading the parliamentary reports yesterday. The colonial secretary was very complimentary about your administration of the Bahamas. I was delighted. I was so proud of you.
Well, Wallace worked tremendously hard to help me, so any success I had was as much hers as mine.
Marina hopes that you'll go and see her at Coppins.
How is she?
Well, I think she's recovering at last from George's death. Her grief was overwhelming. Oh, I miss him.
So do I.
Eventually, I had to tell her that the family cannot have the luxury of a private grief. Or of private joys, for that matter.
Nothing has changed, Mama.
Certain values never change. Well, I believe we're going to have a welfare state. Mr. Attlee is very persuasive on the subject. I like
it. I thought I'd go and look at the fort.
It's be terribly overgrown. Why distress yourself needlessly?
Wallace and I thought that if we weren't going to get another job, another governorship, that we might settle there again.
That would be a mistake.
Wallace and I have been happily married now for 8 years. Does that mean nothing to you?
To know that you are happy means a great deal to me. But it doesn't alter the basic principle. Neither Elizabeth nor I can receive anyone who is divorced. She is the wife of the head of the church, and I am his mother. As to the question of a job, what job? You refused Bermuda.
Yes, but whose macabre idea was that? I cannot agree to being shunted from remote island to remote island. It's a wonder I wasn't offered St. Helena.
Bermuda would have accepted you. Nowhere else will. You do not seem to understand at all how very upset the entire empire was at your abdication. No self-governing dominion will accept you. Bertie cannot force you upon any of the colonies, since it is obvious you will take your wife with you. It means that he would be suggesting as the governor's consort a woman his wife and mother
cannot receive.
Wallace has done more work as governor's wife than any other. I mean, did you know that she ran canteens and organized clinics? No, any other woman would have received a decoration, but she received nothing, not even a letter of thanks. And as wife of a retiring governor, she's entitled to be received at Buckingham Palace. Because she's my wife, she isn't.
Not because she's your wife. Because she's divorced.
Oh, it must be lovely for you and Elizabeth to feel that you've never even made two mistakes. So you base your views on Christian morals, but what's Christian about them? Christ forgave people, you don't.
Dear David, we are meeting after nearly 9 years. Please, please do not let us quarrel now. Reason for our separation grieves me beyond belief. But I couldn't change then, and I can't change now. Let us accept the position. With mutual goodwill and tolerance, it should be possible for us to meet without these assets.
Mutual goodwill? But I've been full of goodwill for you all ever since I abdicated, but there's been no return of goodwill to me. Or to my wife. Why did Bertie deny Wallace her... Why is she not acknowledged, Her Royal Highness?
The government advised against...
Well, yes, of course, they all hated me. Very convenient.
The Dominion government advised against it. You had abdicated.
I am a Royal Highness by right of birth. Bertie didn't make me one, and he knows it. My marriage is legal, so consequently, according to the laws of this country, my wife must take my position. If I'm king, she's queen. If I'm a prince, she's a princess.
As monarch, Bertie has to act within the wishes of the government.
But not even the government can act illegally, and Bertie's action in barring Wallace from her full position as my wife is illegal. I could fight a lawsuit. So I'm advised I have an excellent case. Now, don't worry, I won't. But when you're reflecting, as I'm sure you often do, on the innumerable virtues of your second son and his wife, you might just occasionally remember that your first son and his wife are not without virtue either.
Is the lift working?
It's a bit hesitant still, ma'am.
Put the trolley by me. There, thank you, John. David, will you bring up that table? There's bread and butter. I don't quite know what this cake is made of.
Thank you.
Will you be staying in London long?
Only a week or so. We have got to get our things in order in Paris. Wallace is very busy. There's a lot to do.
Of course. You must both be busy.
Well, like you, we've been living out of suitcases in other people's houses. We can't wait to get into our own home. Of course, our Paris house, like La Croix, is only rented, but there's a house not far from it that we want to buy.
A Paris house is very expensive?
No more so than in London, I should imagine. I haven't gone into it yet. It'll be very convenient living in Paris, though. I can pop over and see you from time to time.
I'd like that, David, so much.
A telephone call for His Royal Highness.
No, who is it?
It's from Paris, sir.
Oh, that'll be Wallace. If you'll excuse me, Mama.
Of course. Oh, David.
Mama?
I send a kind message to your wife.
Thank you, Mama. That's very good of you.
In Crown Matrimonial by Royce Wrighton, Gwen Franken-Davis played Queen Mary and Peter Barkworth, the Duke of Windsor. King George VI was played by Martin Jarvis, Queen Elizabeth, by Jane Wenham, the Princess Royal by Rosalind Shanks, and the Duchess of Gloucester by Deborah Page. Mabel, Countess of Airlie, was played by Rachel Kempson, the Honourable Margaret Wyndham by Hilda Schroeder, Walter Monckton, K.C. by Peter Howell, and the Queen's Page by Anthony Smee. The narrator was Alvar Liddell. Crown Matrimonial was adapted for radio and produced by Ian Cotterell.